Welcome to Sustainability Bridges, a URCIF podcast aimed at building bridges between policymakers, investors, academics, and civil society around the theme of sustainable investing. URCIF is the leading pan-European association promoting sustainable finance and sustainable investing at the European level. In this podcast, the Executive Director of URCIF will invite distinguished guests for a 30-minute conversation on current events shaping the sustainable investing community.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Aleksandra Palińska, and I am the Executive Director of URCIF. For this episode of Sustainability Bridges, I am honored to be joined by Mrs. Sirpa Pietikäinen, a member of the European Parliament since 2008. Sirpa belongs to the group of the European People's Party, Christian Democrats, and the Finnish Kansallinen Kokoomus. She is an active member of the Committee on Economic and Monetary Affairs. Together, we are going to discuss the EU Green Bond Standard, the EU Taxonomy, the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, the Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive, and the evolution of the sustainable finance regulatory framework in the EU and beyond. Dear Sirpa, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. Very happy to be here with you. And sorry about the voice. It is the flu that is an allergy that is passing by and still having some remains.
Well, we are very pleased that despite the health-related challenges, you are here with us today, so thank you so much. Let's maybe start with the yesterday's inter-institutional agreement on the EU Green Bond Standard. What are your views on the agreement? Are you happy with the outcomes of the trilogue negotiations?
Well, I would say it is the usual case, if I compare it to the level what I would have liked to seen to be seen there. So I'm not happy. I would have liked it to be much more stricter, and even having the next steps already sort of agreed how to tighten it up to really steer the investment on these directions. But knowing the political climate and how this whole sustainable finance moves forward step by step, I think that we can all in all be content with the result and start with this one.
I think you're very right. I mean, that's at the end of the day, I would say one of the flaws of the EU legislative making process that, of course, you know, the end result is always a compromise, but I think still quite a lot has been achieved, you know, so congratulations for this agreement, which of course is an important one. And indeed, it will be, you know, a step forward, I think, in the attempts to prevent and fight greenwashing and, you know, create a standard or, well, a label of, you know, higher standards that will give also more certainty to the investors and also further increase the transparency on the sustainability-related considerations.
Exactly. And actually, if we look for the next steps on the Green Deal and the amount of finance what we need both from the EU side, public funding besides the private funding, that is, of course, the leading force, I think that the Green Bond Standard is required and needed there to have the financing vehicle also for these actions.
Indeed. Now, moving on to the next topic. As the rapporteur in the European Parliament's Committee on Economic and Monetary Affairs, you played a central role in developing the EU taxonomy of environmentally sustainable economic activities. Looking back at how it evolved and where we are now, what are your key takeaways? What do you see as the main achievements and things could be improved? And what do you think is and should be the future of the EU taxonomy?
Well, first of all, it feels like I would be talking about my own child when I'm talking about the taxonomy. And there are times when one is so frustrated not to know what to do with that child that is sort of turning out to be a horror kid, like what we know about the taxonomy standards on climate on nuclear and gas. And we all know now when we talk about the, for example, Russian nuclear and the issues with the gas, that certainly labeling them green is not the wisest idea what the member states and commission has had. But all in all, referring to myself on the green bond standard, is still a good step, and we need to sort of keep on struggling from here. I think that it's good that we have it. The first level regulation is very much on place. There are some flaws, like the incineration and waste treatment that I would have not liked to see in, because in circular economy you do not have waste, so why to incentivize that? Incentivize this, but sort of yes, when it says it needs to be science based, based on indicators, substantially better than the industry average, it gives the good grounds. And then again, if we look that we sort of set most of the climate standards, there quite easily we can see the path forward in construction, in energy, in transportation. The forests were not a good one, because if you say that anything you do, if you obey the legislation, I really can't see when then if you obey the legislation, you are better than the industry average. And this is to incentivize the substantially better procedures. So there's a room for improvement. Agriculture we do not have, because it is so contested area and there are a lot of pressures to label all agriculture in Europe green. And this no one would believe to be the case. So I don't know when we can come back on this. But then now we are waiting the whole bulk of the next serious delegated acts, biodiversity, with this 30% ecosystem-friendly areas, as in biodiversity strategy. This is going to be a huge issue to some agriculture, especially in forest countries. Can't be always so proud of Finland here, or the Nordics that matter, because of course it's a big part, an important part of the industry, but you would need to see the future development steps there too. Then we do have the circular economy, looks pretty okay. Then we do have the water issue and the emissions, so the pollution. And hopefully we get this out from the commission. And then again, it might that the forests and agriculture are left over because the biodiversity is so contested there. Better not to have anything than to have something that is not credible. And then the commission actually promised the social standard to make an impact assessment and evaluation whether it is needed. And now we have the due diligence, as we know. So the social standard, the ESG as a whole pack, is coming from windows and doors. So you should have it as part of the taxonomy, but this is not what we are going to see during this commission. So now all the forces and hopes and lobbying is gearing up to the next commission and to the next steps of sustainable finance.
Indeed. Thank you so much for that. I mean, I also hear that the only thing we can still expect is the publication of the so-called Taxo-4 Delegated Act, so the technical screening criteria on the remaining environmental objectives, which I understand is now planned for the end of June. But that's it, you know, for this commission's mandate. But at the same time, I think it is already useful also to start thinking about the future, right? I mean, kind of taking the stock of what has been done so far within the sustainable finance agenda. And in a way, what do we need next, right? I mean, also reflecting on the certain things that maybe need some improvements, amendments, like, for instance, SFDR, so the investor disclosure regulation. But at the same time, yes, also, you know, even in the context of the EU taxonomy, thinking like, okay, is it enough to have a taxonomy of the sustainability, well, environmental sustainable economic activities, right? Or whether in the context of trying to promote the transition, whether actually it could be interesting to further extend the EU taxonomy framework and also eventually constitute the, well, significantly harmful taxonomy of the significantly harmful economic activities. And then, you know, the so-called amber category in the middle, so the kind of intermediate, as well as fleshing then out the no significant impact economic activities. And well, in a way, this is something that was also in part of the recommendations of the former iteration of the Platform on Sustainable Finance, which ended its mandate in autumn last year. I mean, they produced a report in spring last year recommending to go further in the direction as a way to then further help, well, the companies that will report the information, but in particular, the investors and other finance providers, you know, saying that if we complete the EU taxonomy, that could then further help, I would say, well, identify which companies are truly on the, you know, pathway towards sustainability, and also, you know, as a kind of a tool to then maybe help incentivize certain companies move along, right? The, I would say, different stages of the environmental, I would say, impact. So what are your views on that?
Well, it was a big achievement by Parliament on the Commission proposal already to include the significant harm and the understanding of different shades of the sustainability. Because the Commission, if you remember, started with this green, and then you would only be talking about 5 to 10% of the investments. And you are so right that if we do not touch the about 30% of assets that is invested on unsustainable businesses, you can't make the transition. But then again, politically, it's totally impossible, both in the Parliament, at least at the moment, and in the Council, to define what is significant harm is the furthest what we can go. And that's why this end will not sort of come in fruition soon. But it is moving on this direction. The Parliament wanted that this would be fully-fledged accounting. Basically, this is it. It's 50 shades of gray and green, and you are somewhere in the continuum. And it would be important to investors to see in which point of the path the company is in climate. But then again, there's the biodiversity, and then there's the circular economy, then there's the pollution. And then you can't make solar panels with child labor and call it sustainable. And then when you get a multi-factor changing area, it's just like in accounting. You can't fix a fixed number. What is the best number to invest in R&D or marketing or personnel or in cooperation with some others? You can come up with different kind of mixtures, a good or to the bad outcome. And you would need to have this continuum of information so that you could get to see the fully fledged picture, especially in complex areas like in construction. Okay, this is climate friendly. But in biodiversity, there's issue or vice versa. This is fully circular, but not very energy efficient. This is non-polluting, but and you very rarely can find this kind of a perfect lottery win that sort of takes it all. And that could cover actually a big part of the transition. I'm accepting the amber category, but I'm not very happy about that. I understand that there's the pathway how you get from fossils to, let's say, to energy efficiency. But quite easily what happens is that we guide the investments on sidetracks, something that is better but not good. Then you have your money there. Let me pick up the cars example of this. We all know the constructions and that you should stop heating up your buildings with coal. But why do you transform yourself to pipelines of gas instead of having a fully fledged energy efficiency renovation plus solar panels so that you become energy positive? And how does it actually help you if you invest in between in gas to change to this sustainable form? And so always there are great risks in this amber, better than that you actually are in that kind of a sunk investments where you really can't see the path forward. It is another transition, and it takes more time and more money, double investment. And that's why I would like to keep it pretty stringent on talking about what is green. And transition is only that kind of a very easily transmissible. Well, for example, gas could be an easily is amber category and positive if it is in cooperation with the production of a renewable energy, where we know that you need a backup power because there's the fluctuation in production on renewables. And you can easily install and dismantle this kind of a turbines that use gas and produce the extra needed energy. So you are not sort of stuck with the investment. You can use them then later on in some other sites. And this kind of a sort of a deep looking at, on what is actually transitional is missing at the moment. And you label all the gas, and that is not the case. You label all the hydrogen, and blue hydrogen actually might be a bigger problem than a solution. And then it would need to be a green hydrogen. And there's a lot of issues that the experts are very good at. The investors are becoming more and more understanding. Well, then again, how we are fixing this. One is, of course, the developments in IFRS. That actually sort of improves the taxonomy ideology because it extends the sustainability reporting across the categories to all big companies. Then again, especially the Stability Board and ECB is doing a lot of work on defining the climate and biodiversity risks. And that, for example, we know is in discussion with the Basel, next steps of the Basel. If you lend to fossil fuel-dependent companies, you should have higher interest rates for those loans, and you should buffer it with the higher capital requirements. And then again, if it is better, for example, it would be this kind of a loan for a building to be transformed, to be in renewable on solar panels, energy positive and energy efficient. The loans would be lower in interest rate and lower in capital requirements on average, because this is what the future needs. And the value of the asset is going to increase and possibly the value of asset in fossil fuels is going to decrease. And I think that that is the way you get sort of the push out effect from significant harm, at least in banking, investing, and in insurance sector.
You're making very important points. And I think all in all, it just also demonstrates how actually complex all of this is, right? So in a way, there is also no silver bullet, and we can't just, you know, fix all the problems with one solution. But at the end of the day, we need a kind of a package of different measures and appropriate consideration. Now moving on to the next topic. In your role as Shadow Rapporteur, you actively shaped the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, known as SFDR. What is your take on the first years of the application of these rules? And what do you think should be the improvements in the context of the upcoming review of these rules as announced by the Commissioner McGuinness?
Well, I would say that this was the first step, but the Parliament needed to give back quite a lot on trilogues. For example, we do not have the unified benchmark what to use on there. The taxonomy could have been one, but well, now as it is, I'm looking very much for the upcoming developments of the beyond the GDP and natural accounting and all these, because it can give the figures. You should have unified, harmonized standards, calculation methodology, and data. And this is what we are still lacking and pushing from the Parliament very hard for the Eurostat and others to provide. Now, when you can use different sort of benchmarks, it is pretty opaque. It's very cumbersome for the investors to know, should I do this or that? And the comparability is not excellent. And then again, I think that we should actually extend it to basically to all investors. We could exclude the most smallest ones, but not some categories of investors. So these are the next steps, and then to benchmark it bulletproof on indicators, science-based indicators, and that again goes to Eurostat and UN Statistical Authority. In the longer run, we should have a global data pool. What is sustainable? What is natural capital? How you measure it? What is the methodology for LCA, life cycle analysis? Because that needs to be true as long as possible extended for the first shovel on the mine up to the last breath of the material on going down. And you all, we can see there's a huge difference if there's the building standing for 20 years or 200 years. A car that can sustain 2 years or 20 years. And that matter whether sometimes something is more resource consuming but longer lasting and easier to reuse. And sometimes it is vice versa. Anyways, you wouldn't reuse your blue cheese wrappings. And so you need that kind of a sound methodology. Like in accounting, you have the return on investment and others. And then, of course, you improve while you get more information and experience the methodology. But it's there. Everybody uses public and private accounting and disclosure. And this is what we are still quite far from, but I'm expecting quite rapid changes within, let's say, next 5+ years, because the information is coming up there. The pressures for GDP, this is the beyond the GDP, and the measurement of the semester with these tools is coming there. And of course, we can't ask only the private sector to do the task. the public needs to do it also, and that is tough also, as we know. And then you should have the same harmonized methodology in company reporting, in investor disclosure. Now they are not one in one, as we know, and it's unfortunate. And it should be one in one on terminology and limits in taxonomy. Then these should be basis on credit rating agencies, rating companies, and rating governments also. So you shouldn't sort of lose your assets, the natural capital. And if you just increase your financial status, but you destroy your natural capital, that is not an acceptable trade-off.
I think you're making very important points, and also emphasizing the important role to play by the public finance. I don't think we can really rely only on the private finance to save the world. And on top of that, I think we can even sometimes take a step and ask ourselves a question. By merely trying to mobilize finance and try to orient it or channel it in certain economic activities, whether that's enough, right? And in a way also, while the sustainability-related disclosures are crucially important, probably we're not going to save the world with the disclosures only. Touching upon that, let's maybe pass on to the debate on the currently negotiated Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive, which indeed also, well, apart from its main focus on due diligence on environmental and human rights matters through value chain, it also includes very important provisions in terms of mandatory transition plans and climate targets. Well, in general, in the context of this directive, what do you think are the most important provisions that should be adopted in the context of accelerating the transition towards a sustainable economy?
Well, I think it is, and that is very heavily debated in the Parliament and Council, as you know. It is the director's duties. If you sit on the board, you are, of course, liable and responsible how the finances are supervised and organized in the company. So you should be from the other sustainability actors. You can't wash your hands and say, look, I didn't know, how could I? And it should go up to the CEO. And then when there are grave impeachments, it should be always the CEO responsible. It is up to him or her to organize the internal inspections, the systems, the risk assessments. And if they are not in place, you should never be able to wash your hands out of it. Then third is, of course, the compensation. It would be unreasonable to demand all this from the leadership or the boards and then compensate only on financial returns. It needs to be reflected on the compensation, so it is a real incentive. Then it would need to have all environmental sectors. So I'm not happy. I can... live with the fact that we start with the climate. But I'm not happy of saying the climate because we have too much climate-only policy. And it will take some time before we get the next round. And always when you have the climate-only, you get this kind of a biodiversity or other blindness. Just pick up the palm oil. Pick up some other factors in resource efficiency, and there's the long list, and it is the sunk investments once again. So don't look only one thing, but all the environmental issues. And yes, I'm a strong advocate of the transitional plans. And actually, as you might know, according to McKinsey study, it was almost 10 years ago, the advanced companies started to having their own transitional plans. So this is not the new kid in the block. And you need to show that you are seriously thinking. Not only that you say, it's like me saying with this flu, okay, I'll run marathon. And then you ask me after 3 years what happened. And I said, oh, sorry, forgot. It was too difficult. And to have a transition plan where you explain, okay, I'm going to get myself firstly in good shape physically. Then I'm going to eat well and sleep well and walk a lot and run and to get a personal trainer to guide me throughout the process. And then I would have all my excels what have happened. And that is a credible change. But then just promising and someone asking, did anything happen, is not the way how to do it.
Thank you very much for sharing this. And, well, while obviously this directive, I think, is primarily targeted at the large real economy companies, there is, you know, a big debate on the financial sector inclusion in the provisions. Do you believe it is important to also include financial sector both in the provisions with regards to due diligence and also in the scope of the Article 15, meaning the obligation to set and implement transition plans and climate targets?
Yes, definitely. And I think that the biggest investors are doing that already, as we know, when it comes to especially on climate, but other environmental factors. Then it is the question how you take the social sector and social issues into account. And there we do have a lot to do technically. Or the information is there, the methodology is there, but we do have a lot of work to do so that this information would be quantitative and qualitative wise adequate for investors to make the investments, and by that way we can trust the investors and they, what they are doing. And of course the investors themselves act, let's say, in third countries. What we would think of an investor that invests on gas and oil in Russia at the moment. Quite clearly, the judgment is out there already, and there are expectations. And I think that the investors, compared to many other industry sectors, are far, far more advanced and ahead. So it's not going to cause problems. It's the big problem how they do get the information from the sources where they invest to.
Thank you very much. Now, taking a step back at what has been done within the sustainable finance agenda so far, what do you think needs to be achieved next? What do you think should be the priorities pursued by the European Commission in the months and years to come?
Well, I think, and I see it vital, inevitable, that the next Commission has the next steps on Green Deal as a part of its circular economy and other sectors, and as a part of it, part of the Green Deal, the next steps, the next 10 steps on sustainable finance. And a lot of that can be found. That was actually not that bad, the sustainable finance strategy, the roadmap, the program, what they presented, was it 3 years ago? And then everything was stalled because of the corona and all that. we would need to do at least five things. Firstly, strongly start establishing this EU and global database for investors and public also, so that we know. And a lighter version of that, I call it a nutritional value tablet, so that you do not need to go in detail in hundreds and thousands of pages and calculations. You can see that, okay, this is the average amount of calories and potassium and proteins what you have in cabbage, in carrots, in eggs, and in olive oil. Then you just calculate, okay, mayonnaise, this means X, and in coleslaw, this means Y. And then you can calculate this together, and you get a very good approximation, what is the coleslaw, calorie, potassium, protein, whatever content. And for small investors, for SMEs, it is vital that they would have that kind of a database where they can check, okay, my building, the size, the material, the energy consumption, what kind of energy. Are we using a car fleet? What kind of a cars? How many kilometers? The footprint is this or that? And so forth. And it would help them and guide them to make a healthier choices when they are that kind of a packages like the coleslaw. If I work with this partner, it means that at least these things are taken care of. Okay, this is one of my dreams, and this needs a lot of time, and this is that's why the most important to start early on. Second is the beyond the GDP. So put the same do no significant harm and ESG principles and due diligence on public sector, member states, different European funds, European budgets, and so forth. The third is to push the IFRS further, and then the database and this kind of a nutritional value, sustainability value tablet in global scale. And then on the rest of the roadmap, it is the basically same stuff what we have seen and what I said. Include all the lending and insurances. Put the banks and capital requirements in line with this. ensure that credit ratings include the sustainability ratings for public and private. Look through all the EU 27 bits and pieces of regulation to harmonize the sustainability perspective in there. Somewhere it is, somewhere mostly it is not. Just picking up MiFID as an example. And then when we have the bigger picture, we should sort of harmonize and to see that this thinking is relevant, harmonized, and with same footing in all different banking regulation, be it venture capital, be it insurance, retail investor protection, or whatever branch, capital markets union.
Thank you. I think indeed we have still plenty to do and to achieve. Now, looking into the EU elections, what do you think we can expect? I mean, in terms of, do you think there is hope and chance that we will be still able to be ambitious in the future with regards to the sustainable finance and sustainability overall?
Well, I'm hopeful. I duly hope so. Because there are more and more people understanding why this matters, that this is not a matter of taste. Do you prefer raspberries or strawberries? It is a matter, a bit like a doctor tells you that now you have a breast cancer, you better act. you don't start saying. You might consult another opinion if you don't believe, but you don't start bargaining. Nah, not operation this year, maybe next year or the year after. And you don't say, what about other treatments like the radiation treatment? No, I won't take them. Sounds horrible. I take just half what you suggest me to do. Because everybody knows how stupid that would be. And it is exactly the same here. Why to do halfway? Why to look short-term? In quotes, interest, member state interests, like this gas and nuclear forest, as I said, because it leads to stupid solutions that are more difficult to fix a bit later on. And this is why I'm hoping that more and more people and businesses is getting and voting accordingly. But what I can see is then the difference, and you can see it very easily in the parliament. It's the big division. Those ones who get it, and the ambition level is substantially high. Tenfold resource efficiency, not harming biodiversity, rewilding 30%, and so forth, our sustainable finances and so on. And then we have this, I don't know, growing or not number, but 20-30% of population in our member states and in parliament saying, world, I want to go out. I want to go to my grandma's pies and sunny Sundays on summer. And I don't want to have refugees. I don't want to have chains. I don't want to hear about climate change. I love my diesel. I don't want to. And then it depends whom the politics listens. And in a way, it is a role of an adult and a child. Adult is the one who gets it. It's the spouse for the cancer patient who says, okay, we'll do it, we'll survive it, we'll figure out. And the child is there. No, mommy, don't go. It's dangerous. And in this picture, everybody knows that you shouldn't listen only that worry. Mommy, I'm scared. World, EU, I'm scared. What will happen? The things are so different, what we are talking and doing, than they were 20 years ago.
Well said. Now, we have quite a lot of asset managers, investors, and other financial market practitioners listening to our podcasts. Would you like to pass any messages, recommendations, or asks?
I'm glad to do so. First one is you yourselves and the companies need ecological competence. You all know that you couldn't lead or manage the assets or your business and not to know what is a balance sheet or not to talk about reading it. And everybody takes that as a self-evident fact. Today's and tomorrow's world, you need to combine ecological competence and economic competence. You need to know in system-wise how ecosystems functions, what it means that we are using 1.5 times the planetary resources every year. Well, what is endocrine disruptors and why you need to dechemicalize. You need to learn fast and you need to have some experts in your boards. Some at least who's really good both in economics and ecological competence. And all of the people should have at least mediocre ecological competencies. You wouldn't hire a person who doesn't understand what is a balance sheet to run your company, would you, or to sit on your board. You shouldn't hire a person who really doesn't understand what the ecosystem is. This is the first. Then the second, and this is very much in line with the first one. If politicians and science disagree, don't listen to the politicians, listen to science. We can't decide Fit for 55 is enough if the science says it is not and it should be 75 for Fit 55 instead of now 55-55. And this is only debt that we are taking and we need to pay it back later on, more costly. And the third is linked on this one also. It is the biodiversity. It's the new kid on the block. We need to, and it is more serious than the climate. And we can't look only the climate. We need to look at the biodiversity. We need to take urgent actions there. And that's why that needs to be sort of embedded in transition plans and investment plans and on the requests on companies, how they are making their transitional plans and how they are dealing with the biodiversity. And just saying we do not know and we do not have impact is not the right answer. And circular economy, then, also, believe those ones that are on the right track, who have the right question and right ambition level. And for your own sake, avoid the sidetracks where you do something slightly better and end up with a stone-dead investment for the future. This is what I would like to say to you. And the last, the sugar on the bottom. Thank you that you exist. I've said in some places that when I was a young girl, I believed on Greenpeace saving the world. Nowadays, I'm believing that the investor community and the financial sector is going to do that. If anyone is. So I'm relying very heavily on you because money runs the world. You can decide on what direction. And then please do make pure business, really pure business.
Thank you so much. And let's end on this very positive note. Thank you so much, Sirpa, for joining us today for this very insightful conversation and for your time.
Thank you.
It brings us to the end of this insightful conversation and the end of today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Do not hesitate to like, follow and share this episode of Sustainability Bridges. URSIF will continue in the next episode to bridge the gap between the policymaking and the practice of sustainable investing with the help of distinguished guests. In the meantime, please visit our website and follow us on social media to stay tuned. See you next time for a new episode of Sustainability Bridges.